places, everyone. Quiet on the set. Curtains in five.
Hello, and welcome to Footlights, a community theater podcast coming to you from the studios of WVIK Radio on the campus of Augustana College in Rock Island, Illinois. I'm Chris Hicks, and joining me today as co-host is one of my favorites, the amazing Jake Ladd. And we are recording today on July 16th, 2025. Sydney, forgive me for being corny, but I just love your last name. Because it sounds like a luscious dessert, just like your performances, especially in your recent show, Marry Me a Little. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Let's start out with you giving us some background, as much as you like, you know, your past theater history, where you grew up, how you got into theater, your social security number, your bank accounts, anything you want to tell us.
My start to theater began at a very young age. My mom is a piano teacher, so I grew up around music all of my life. I started playing piano at the age of 3, and my grandparents used to perform at nursing homes, and they called themselves the Fabulous Ones. And so my sister and I, Chelsea and I, we would go along with them occasionally and sing at the nursing homes because we were homeschooled, so we were more available during the day when they had their gigs. And so that's how I started my performing. And when my sister was 6, we discovered that Quad City Music Guild was putting on a production of The Sound of Music. And she and I both auditioned, and she ended up cast as Gretel, and I did not get cast that year. But the next year I was in Beauty and the Beast. And so that was my first official show, was Beauty and the Beast. And I got bit by the theater bug hard as soon as I was on that stage, and I have never looked back since, other than I did take a 7-year break when I got married and had kids. But I've been back since August, so I'm excited.
Wow. Playing the piano at 3? I'm just astounded. Your little hands couldn't reach the keys. Well, seriously, I mean, right now I have a 3-year-old pseudo-granddaughter, and I don't think she could reach the keys to get anything.
Sure, I don't think I was playing chords at that time or anything, but learning what the letters were and plunking out, like, my ABCs or things like that.
Well, by a strange coincidence, Music Guild is preparing a production of Sound of Music in the upcoming, no, this season, yes?
Mm-hmm. Auditions are in August.
And are you and your sister planning to revisit your previous audition experience there?
My sister is moving to Chicago again to be a travel speech-language pathologist, but I am absolutely planning on auditioning for The Sound of Music.
And what part do you want?
I would love to be Maria, but I would also be willing to take Liesel.
Well, if I were casting, I'd put you in as Maria right away.
What happens. There are so many talented individuals in the Quad Cities.
I agree.
And
I
could cast it 10 times over.
I have been absolutely blown away by the talent that's at Music Guild.
Absolutely.
So, wow. So, you started out with Beauty and the Beast. What happened next?
I was involved after that in the Quad City Opera Company for a while. I did 3 productions with them. I did La Boheme, and I did Carmen, and I did the Pied Piper with them.
So are you classically trained then in opera?
I am not.
Do you take voice lessons?
I have taken voice lessons in the past from Sonia Hardy here at Augustana. My vocal instructor, her name is Allison. She is coincidentally now married to one of my former colleagues, so it was really cool because we knew each other for 8 years, and then they ended up getting married. I just love them as a couple, but she taught me most of what I know about singing, and then Sonia perfected it. So,
and I should mention, since there was a reference to it, that Sydney is a Augustana alum.
So. Yes, she is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just fresh off production that my co-host directed, Marry Me a Little. Let's talk about that, because that was a really unique production.
It was. It is. And it was a wonderful experience for me to direct, but especially so because of our, it's a two-person show, two-person non-dialogue show, all music. 22 pieces of music, which is an incredible amount of music for anyone to learn, but it's only divided between two performers.
I'm surprised you had your voices held up.
Well, because Sydney is a pro, so but I was very lucky in being able to work with Sydney.
And it was unusual in that it was produced at Playcrafters, which does not typically produce musicals.
Mm-hmm. That's right. I think it was the first musical they had done in something like 17 years. So it's been a while. It was a project I had wanted to do for some time. I had done the West Coast Professional premiere of the show back in 1983 when the Earth's crust was still cooling and I was, I think, in my early 20s. I've been wanting to do it again. Playcrafters has a wonderful, their playing space is a wonderful spot to work. And Sydney was, well, Sydney and Thane Lam, who played the other part in the show, are two of the most intuitive performers I've ever worked with, not just here in the Quad Cities, but anywhere. They are amazing to work with.
Well, I wish I would have thought of this adjective when I was writing my review of the show. Sydney, you were just luminous in that role.
Thank you so much.
It just really transcended everything. So I want to compliment you on that. So now that we jumped ahead, can we go back and find out how you developed since Beauty and the Beast?
I'm going to interject and say that I think a huge part of her development was our working together on Fiddler on the Roof at Music Guild. I'm just kidding, of course. But it was that's how I met Sydney.
Oh, that's right. You were one of the daughters.
Yeah, I was Seitel.
Yeah. Which, another sterling performance. But
and to get even with that first attempt with Sound of Music, where your sister was cast and you were not, Sydney's laughing because she knows where I'm going with this. They both auditioned for Fiddler on the Roof, and our question to them was, is this a package deal? Do we have to cast both of you,
yes,
or can we cast one
well,
of you?
Well, there were sisters.
Exactly. But unfortunately, we were not able to cast both of them, but we did cast Sydney, and that's where I discovered what a remarkable, not only singer, but actress that Sydney is.
I agree with that.
Thank you.
Very much so. The dual talent is absolutely amazing.
Thank you so much.
You did more between Beauty and the Beast and Fiddler on the Roof.
I did,
so
yes.
Fill us in.
One of my...
You are the rare actress that doesn't want to talk about herself.
Gotta have that humility. One of my favorite roles that I ever played was Anne in Anne of Green Gables. So that was also at Playcrafters. That was my first title role. I had had a couple leads, like very, very small leads leading up to that. That was the first time I commanded the stage. Donna Weeks was my director. And I went to the audition, and I had prepared for it for months and months in advance. I checked out the book from the library. I checked out the script from the library. I watched the movie. I really learned who the character was. And then I showed up to auditions in braids, ready to go. And
Did you also dye your hair red?
For the show, I did end up dyeing my hair red. And I have a funny story about that. She had asked me to come back the next day wanting me to look older. Because in the show, Anne of Green Gables, she ages
right.
a lot. And so the next day, I had a completely different hairdo. I had done some makeup, wore a different outfit, and I showed up, and she shook my hand and asked me my name. And I said, my name is Sydney Crumbleholm, and she was like, oh my gosh, you're the same person from yesterday?
Awesome.
And so it was, she basically said I was unrecognizable from the day before, which was really cool, because that just shows the power of costume and makeup. I wasn't in costume per se, it was just in clothing, but I tried to dress the part. And then the next day, so there were 3 days of auditions, it was down to me and another girl. And
you shot the other girl so you'd get the part.
I did. We both reached for the gun.
Have you seen on Netflix the Anne with an E?
I have not, but it's been recommended that I watch it. It is on my list to do.
I think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah. I don't watch a lot of TV or shows. I tend to be pretty... My mom always said when we grew up, why would you watch someone else's life if you can go live your own? And that's what she said to us to discourage us from too much screen time. But one could argue and say that watching a play or a musical is watching someone else's life too. So it's all entertainment.
And as performers, we seek to be another life.
Absolutely, yes. So the girl and I, her name was Carly, she and I went back and forth between reading Diana and Anne. And they would trade off mm-hmm. which girl would read which. And she had told us that we had one day to memorize, I don't know how many pages it was. There was a monologue that was like a couple paragraphs long, and then there was a couple pages of dialogue, I think. And she had a video camera at the audition.
Wow.
And now having auditioned for a lot of musicals, I'm used to having video cameras there. But she did it as a trick, and it wasn't recording, but we didn't know. And she wanted to see how we could do under pressure. And so to see how we handled that pressure, she was amazing. She's one of my favorite directors I've ever had in my entire life.
Wow.
Yeah, she completely changed how I act and how I prepare. I love her so much. And so
is she still in the Quad Cities?
She is not. She lives in Springfield. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually might go visit her soon. I miss her so much. So that was my first title role.
But that was a non-singing.
That was a non-singing role.
Okay.
And then I was very fortunate 4 years later to play the same character in a different play. So she then she directed Anne of Avonlea. And I did have to re-audition. I wasn't automatically cast. I was put up against all the other
But you were
girls.
On to her video camera trick by that time.
I had insider information.
Did she use that?
For the second one, I can't remember.
Because that's really interesting. But I can see where it would be very helpful for a director to do the whole audition so that when you go back and trying mm-hmm. to figure out where to put a character, you can go back and review yeah. their audition.
Mm-hmm. Recently, many of my auditions have been filmed.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. That is pressure. Coming from the audition side.
Mm-hmm. I mean, all auditions are pressure. I would rather perform than audition.
Well, yeah.
Well, of course. I mean, that's the goal when you do audition. I feel more nerves for the audition process than I do for, say, stage fright or something
and,
like that.
And most performers do, by the way.
Really?
Feel that way, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know very many actors who are thrilled about the audition process. It's nerve-wracking. Mm-hmm. There's so much that's unknown.
Right.
What you're walking into.
I agree with that. I don't think I'm horribly nervous when I audition or have auditioned because I think I'm done with auditioning.
Well, nerves and pressure are two different things, to be honest with you.
That's true.
You can have you can internalize a lot of pressure going into a situation as a performance or an audition,
okay.
but not necessarily
we
be
look at
nervous.
It that way, yeah.
But for a lot of actors, it's much easier to perform for an audience of 1,000 than it is for an audience of one director who's casting a play.
He speaks so. Truth.
That is something that I've always encountered that people, I've never been able to understand. I mean, we who get up on stage and perform love doing it. But the majority of people, I mean, they'd rather die than give a book report, an oral book report. And it's like, I would much rather be in front of 1,000 people than 3.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I'm not good at making small talk.
Sure.
at a party, if I don't know somebody, you know, don't know the crowd, it's a new situation, you will find me by the potted plant.
It's a different type of skill.
Truly.
It's like
truly.
Building a muscle.
So, keep going. After Anne of Green Gables.
So, after Anne of Green Gables.
Oh, let me ask, how old were you when you auditioned for that?
I was a freshman in high school.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm. And then my senior year is when they did Anne of Avonlea.
Senior of high school?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. That's it. And what other venue was it?
There was also a Playcrafters.
They did, oh, Avonlea. They, mm-hmm. It was a follow-up. Okay,
yeah,
I got it.
It was the second.
So then?
So in between that, I did some things at Moline High School. I was in Sound and Music. Eventually, I got cast. I was Louisa.
There's a lot of kids in that show. Where did she fall in the family?
So, hold on. She's kind of in the middle. Let's see if I can remember the order. There's Gretel, Marta, Kurt. No, Brigitte. Then Kurt, then Louisa, then
so
Liesl,
you are on the
then
lower Fre- end.
No, Friedrich, then Liesl. Looks like I have some... some homework to do before
before you audition.
Before you audition, musical. But you're auditioning for David Blakey, so you don't have much to worry about. I mean, in terms of David is a pussycat. He's so nice
now,
to work with.
Do I recall you said you're auditioning for Sound of Music in mm-hmm. August?
Yes.
At Music Guild.
Mm-hmm.
I thought you had told me, Jake, that. Everybody auditioned at once and you fight it. The directors fight it out.
For the summer program.
Those are for the summer mm-hmm. musicals.
Oh, that's right. Sound of Music is until November.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay.
And that was an interesting process, by the way. Something I had never seen before in my life. And
well,
I've seen a lot of
let's
things.
Let's talk about that a little bit. You know, how does that work?
Well, fortunately, well, we mentioned David Blakey. Fortunately, the producer that was assigned to... Fiddler was David, and I think they one of the reasons that they assigned David to me, or David agreed to do it, was because they wanted somebody with a lot of experience in their program working with me, because I had never worked
right.
in their program before. And I, as I mentioned, I've done a lot of plays, and I had never seen anything quite like it. So it's a workout. For everyone, the actors, the production staff, the board of directors, and certainly the director.
It also has to take a lot of time.
It does. It's
I mean, just the audition process, not the afterward when you get together with the other directors.
Well, there's three.
Duke it out.
The summer music, there's three projects auditioning. And for us, it was our production, Fiddler, and then, of course, there was Little Night Music and also Newsies. Speaking about a lot of children. And the actors are auditioning for one or two or three of those shows, indicating a preference as to their number one choice, number two choice, number three choice, etc. So you may have an idea of who, after an audition, who you may want in your show, but then you have to look at whether you ranked first, second, or third in their choice, and even then... There are two other directors who are also looking at the same material. So when all of the actors are done and finished and have gone home after the whole process, the production teams are all assembled in the lobby. And there's, each name of every actor that auditioned
video would come in handy. Mm-hmm.
is read out. And that's when we could use that dancer. We'll trade you a tenor for
it's like a fantasy football team.
It's a little bit like fantasy draft, actually, yes. So anyway, the bottom line is, of course, that it works. And you know
sure.
that because they're what now? They're 76th season or 77th season and going strong. It's just, as I say, it is not a common practice. So, it took a little getting used to.
Now, are the performers asked to sing specific songs from the productions or what? Because if you're auditioning for three shows, obviously there's a big range of songs from three shows. So do you sing?
Different directors opt for different things. There are some directors that don't want a performer auditioning for a particular musical to sing from that score. And then there are directors who just want the actor to sing whatever they're comfortable with. They're interested in their ability to perform, tell a story, what their range is and what their vocal quality is, okay, regardless of the song. And so, and I fall into that latter category. Except that I try to give some guidance when the audition notices go out as to, you know, pick something that is appropriate to the show. You know, if you're...
Okay, Sydney, so what did you sing during the Fiddler?
What did I sing? I think it was from Little Women. No, I think I sang from Beauty and the Beast.
You sang from Beauty and the Beast.
Did I sing Home?
Yes.
Okay, I sang Home from Beauty and the Beast.
I'm
it's
not
been
only,
a while.
Not only here to be a co-host, but I'm here to be your memory, too, so... No,
you're way too young to not be able to remember these things.
Well, that's about the volume of work that Sydney does.
Well, you know, that's true. I've reviewed so many shows now that I can't remember titles at all. Yeah.
But with our experience, Sydney's and mine, when we were working on Fiddler, Sydney was, I was casting Sydney and interested in her to play the oldest daughter. And the oldest daughter, the oldest of the five daughters in Fiddler, is the emphasis is primarily on the acting because it's a it's an intense, intensely dramatic part. And with the second oldest, it's on the emphasis on the vocal, and the third oldest, the emphasis on the dance. So it's structured that way. So although Sydney sings beautifully, I was also as interested in whether she could
act.
Yeah. So.
Ah.
I would say, in terms of my triple threat, my hierarchy of skill would be acting and then singing and then dancing. Dancing is definitely the one that I struggle with the most. I can do it, especially tap, but I did start taking dance lessons this year just to help kind of guide me a little bit better in my area of weakness.
Now, since we have the advantage of the director and the performer in the same show, let's talk about Marry Me a Little. What song did you sing for that? Or did you sing a song? What did you ask, Jake?
Well, Sydney, we were in a big hurry. We were, Marry Me a Little was not something that was scheduled. There was an injury that caused a postponed production. And at one point I was asked by a former board member if I had any ideas of a show that could go into that time slot. And since I had that production in my mind, that was, Marry Me a Little was the one I suggested. And so we were in a big hurry to secure rights and get into rehearsal.
All the back. So, story that goes to putting on a
show.
Sure.
And so Sydney auditioned by video.
Oh.
So it was a video audition, which normally I wouldn't have done, but I had worked with Sydney and I knew she could sing. But I had not worked with her in a part that was so intensely, well, in this case, all vocal. So you auditioned with
Greenfinch.
Yeah.
With what?
Greenfinch and Linnet Bird from Sweeney Todd.
Oh, okay.
So it was a Stephen Sondheim piece. I should mention Marry Me a Little is all Sondheim music.
Yeah. That's why I chose it.
Yeah.
Sondheim is kind of unique, I think.
Well, he's more than unique. He's
the understatement of the century.
Yeah, it's...
Thank you. At least I did something.
he's a puzzle to be solved for performers. And in this case, it was music from throughout his career, from the mid-1950s, virtually or nearly to the present. And These were all orphan songs, songs that had either been written for other shows but were cut from the final production, or songs that had been written and had never been placed in a show, or shows that were just never produced. So it was a very interesting project. And I know that they worked very hard. Sydney mentioned tap dancing, and you know, this was not just a singing show. It's an acting show without dialogue. Sort of like directing a silent movie in a way.
Very challenging, and Sydney, you definitely met the challenge. How did you prepare for that role?
I think one of the things that helped me the most in preparing for the role during the rehearsal process was the fact that I have some improv experience. I was trained in high school by Jeff DeLeon. He's one of our local improv artists. And then in college here at Augustina, I was in Haywire for 4 years and ended up running the team my senior year. And so learning to create characters on my own was a skill that I gained through that practice. And something that I have discovered about my process of being in a show is that acting to me has absolutely nothing to do with the dialogue. Dialogue is important, absolutely, words are very important, but it's what you do with your face, it's what you do with your body, it's what you do with your intonation, it's how you hold a paintbrush, it's how you eat a cookie. And there are some of the most special moments to me in Marry Me a Little became the moments when Thane was singing, and the rare occasion where I was quote-unquote doing nothing. That's when the character came out.
And that, I agree with you, that was something that I noticed. You looked, even though it was an open easel for sightline purposes, that there was no canvas that you were working with, you absolutely looked like you were painting a picture.
I am an art teacher, so that does help.
Well, it showed. It definitely showed. While your character is one person going through, excuse me, several different emotional things, I loved the way you transitioned from more serious to lighthearted to talk about that a little.
I think one of the things that made this show so special is that it's relatable. It's relatable to anybody, to any circumstance they're going through. It conveys a very universal experience. And everyone has their story. Everyone has their triumphs. Everyone has their hardships. And as cliche as that is, being able to experience that wide array of emotions through singing was very cathartic to me and very healing to me in my own emotional journey.
Interesting. Do you have a bucket list role?
I have
three dream roles. Three, okay.
I want to be Jo March in Little Women more than anything. I also would love to be Maria in The Sound of Music. And I'm not just saying that because it's this year. It's been a dream role forever. And lastly, this one will never happen because I do not look the part at all, but I would love to be Zipporah in The Prince of Egypt, the Broadway version of the musical.
Oh, I am not familiar with that show at all.
Go ahead and listen to it. It is phenomenal. It's very similar to the movie, but they have omitted a couple songs and added in, I think, about six more. It is my go-to hype-up musical. A lot of times, actually, performers have pre-show rituals a lot of the time, either with their group of castmates or individually, and I've got my own little things that I do before I perform every single time. But one of the things that I love to do when I'm getting ready for a musical or a play is when I'm putting on my makeup, my costume, getting my hair ready, things like that, I just put that musical on and I listen to it. It gets me in the zone. So
that's cool.
Beautiful, beautiful music. I would give anything to be Zipporah in it, but That's one of those ones that's just not going
to
happen.
I'll have to check that out. Maria,
mm-hmm.
How does that feel? That is an iconic role. You're competing with Julie Andrews.
Chris, are you asking Sydney, how do you solve a problem like Maria?
I think I am.
Well, I'm not a nun, so I don't know the answer to that question.
She wasn't yet either, so don't worry about that. She was just checking it out.
I think when it comes to being a role that has been played by many, many talented individuals, either on film or Broadway, etc., it's not about copying what they've done or beating what they've done. It's about researching in your own way what that musical is about, what that role is about, what are their motives, what drives them, what story are they telling and why, and how is that going to impact an audience. If you can answer those questions, you can bring your own individual performance aspects to it. Any other celebrity in the world could potentially have played Maria, and they would have done a beautiful job, but they would have done it very differently than she would. And so it's, when I audition for a role that's been done many times before by many famous people, it's not that I have to be like them. It's that I have to be like me and show the director and show the audience what my experience brings to that role, while still keeping true to the essence of who the role is supposed to be within the context of the story.
That film was also some 60 years ago. So what I also find is a lot of young performers don't even have that as a reference in their memory that Julie, I mean, the most common response I get when I'm working with younger performers is, who's Julie Andrews?
Oh, goodness.
So the idea that that is in their head as something to emulate is also, I'm not speaking for Sydney, but for many performers, that's just not, it's something that sort of frees them in a way from emulating some previous performance.
Kind of surprises me in the sense that that's one of the films that is annually on television and on some channel, especially with so many channels available now.
Yeah, you would think that, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Well,
I can't tell you the number of times that since I, you know, have reached the age of maturity, when younger actors have no idea about the names that you and I would think everyone would know forever. Yeah. But, you know.
Well, and I'll throw myself under the bus here. Jake has so many references in his belt. And during rehearsals, we would go out to eat afterwards with the cast and crew. And he would be talking about some famous show or some famous actor. And I'd be like, just listening and nodding. He's like, you have no idea who that is, because it was written all over my face. And I'm like, enlighten me. So I feel like even working with Jake, I got an education in theater just because there were so many classics that I hadn't seen. So I do believe him when he says people don't know who Julie Andrews is.
In the show I was just in, we had several little kids.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the lines in the show is, the show was Miss Nelson is Missing. Mm-hmm. So it was children. And in the classroom, they tie up one of the kids and muffle them with tape or something. And they're saying, what did she say? I think she's saying oil can. And it was just right over the kids' heads. And finally, after about 3 weeks of rehearsal, I said, do you know what that reference is? No. So of course they couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Interpret it because they didn't
Wizard
know what
Oz.
It was.
Sure.
But the Wizard of Oz is on at least once a year.
Sure.
And I said, it's from the Wizard of Oz when they come on the Tin Man and he can't move because he's rusted. Oh, that makes sense now.
They're probably all more familiar with Wicked right now with how popular that
truly,
is.
Truly, truly.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that you're going to audition for Maria and what you just said, which was a beautiful interpretation of preparing for a role, I was really impressed with that.
Thank you.
Have you started that process since it's July and auditions are in August. Are you on the way to preparing for that audition?
Yes, I did actually just 2 days ago when I was cleaning my house, put it on in the background just to kind of remind myself of the songs and the characters and things like that, just kind of mentally preparing for that audition. I have not selected my audition song yet, only because the one that I used this summer was I Have Confidence, which is from the show. And I know a lot of times it's discouraged to sing from the show at an audition, so I'm not going to be doing that. I may sing something from Marry Me a Little, so I'm not sure.
And which song from Marry Me a Little are you thinking about?
Potentially Anyone Can Whistle.
I don't remember.
It's a nice one.
They were all nice.
You know, it bears explaining, perhaps, for your audience, why many directors don't want performers to sing from the score. And it's really to help the actor, because a director sits at an audition generally with some kind of idea in the back of their head as to what every role kind of looks like and should sound like and so on. And when you, as an actor, do your interpretation without the the input of a director that you would get in rehearsal, you're spinning the wheel and taking a shot at what that director is looking for in that role. So you come in having prepared a song from the show that character you want to play is going to be singing, and it doesn't jibe with what the director has in his brain about mm-hmm. that role. It's really, it puts you at a disadvantage as a performer. Rather than coming in with something that is not from the show, but shows your vocal range and your ability to tell a story and through song and ability to demonstrate your vocal range and so on, and your vocal characteristics. So that's the main reason. It puts the actor at a disadvantage. So some actors are discouraged from doing that.
I'm jotting here what I want to ask so I don't forget, because sure. I forget all the time. I get in thinking, and then when I want to say it, I can't. So did I understand you correctly, because I could be wrong here, that the song you just talked about, Something Certain? Confident?
Oh, I Have Confidence.
I Have Confidence. I don't remember that from the film, but it's been a long time since I've seen the film. So are there songs in the stage production that are not in the film?
In I find a lot of musicals, that is the case. And I'm going to be completely honest here. I do not know if they... Because it's been a while since I've been in Sound of Music. I can't remember specifically what that lineup is. I do know it's very, very similar. But the song in particular, I Have Confidence, is in both of them.
Okay. And I asked that because after just seeing Sister Act over at Countryside,
mm-hmm.
that was completely different musically than the film was.
Sure.
So I just wonder, I think people go in, especially on something like Sister Act and Sound of Music, that is a famous film and people have seen and yada, yada, yada. So they're expecting an exact replica of the film. And so that kind of took me back that it was totally different.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think they were almost all original songs in Sister Act. So, okay, now, Jake, when you were casting Marry Me a Little, I don't know how to ask this intelligently. Pairing up, because you only have two actors, how did you, vocal quality compared to Thane or whoever else auditioned? Did you have a big audition crowd?
No, we didn't. Excuse me, no, we didn't. We had four females auditioning for the part of the girl, and we had three auditioning for the part of the boy. And Some of that decision making was very easy because some of those people did not have the vocal ability to do a show like this, number one. But in this case, you need performers who have a tremendous skill set because, again, you're telling a story without any dialogue. So they have to be able to act the part, tell the story, convey their situation and their range of feelings and thoughts and so on and what they're going through to an audience without any dialogue. They have to be able to do it with a song, which means they have to be facile enough with the storytelling element of singing. In addition to that, these are not easy songs. These are extremely difficult songs. This is why we say
he's unique.
Sondheim is a puzzle. How do you solve a problem like Stephen Sondheim? to stick with the Sound of Music motif that's running through this segment. Having had the advantage of having worked with both Sidney and Thane before, you know, I knew their abilities. So, and they both can play the same age range, and they both were just so strong in their abilities. It really wasn't a question.
You're kind of lucky in that respect.
Yes, and the question was the only question was, you know, who was going to keel over first? The two of them processing all of this material in a short amount of time.
How much rehearsal time did you have for that?
Not much. They had 28 rehearsals.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's not a lot of time for
the amount of songs that we were singing, yeah.
When you're preparing for a singing role like this, do you get a piece, do you get the music to take home to sing along with? How do you do that?
Yeah, once I was cast, I was given the material right away so I could jumpstart on learning it because there was so much content to be absorbed and memorized. That was definitely my biggest challenge in the show, was the sheer amount of volume of lyrics and
the
intervals.
So
it's so complicated. Like, there would be random jumps that when you're learning them don't make sense. But once you know it, you're like, oh, that's why he put that interval there. You're able to kind of internalize that. But yes, we were given the material very early, right away, so we could learn it quickly.
I would add also that Sondheim's music is, there are key changes every moment, and the intervals, the jumps between notes and so on are complicated, and none of it is the kind of thing that is typical of anyone else's music. But the other thing that we had going for us is I had been able to get Jonathan Turner to do the musical direction for the show. And although I've known Jonathan for a while, we've never actually had the opportunity to work together before. And so that was a terrific collaboration. We simply could not have put the show together in 28 days without Jonathan's input.
Oh, he was paramount. Yeah,
we had Jonathan for a total of 12 days out of that. And then
do I recall he recorded the music for the show because he had to be out of town or something?
No, he was with us for actually 11 and a half days, then he was jumping to musical direct Fun Home at Black Box.
That's right.
And so we decided to record the music because it's very complicated. It's very difficult music to play. And by the time our production was green-lighted, everyone else who had the musical chops to perform that was already engaged in other shows. And as you know, it's a thing here in the Quad Cities that every show is playing, it seems like, on the same dates as every other show in town.
Well,
so
last weekend, four shows opened.
Yeah.
Between Sundays, I went to and reviewed five shows.
Oh, my goodness.
No, I take it back. I didn't review the last one. and I won't say on air why, but I attended all five.
Sure.
So have you done any other kind of work, like backstage or anything like that?
Yeah, I have. I worked backstage in Annie, not this most recent one. I was Lily St. Regis in Annie recently, but the time that I did Annie before,
And that was at Spotlight, correct?
Yeah, the one that I was in. Yes, it was at Spotlight. At Music Guild, I was stage right crew. Playcrafters, I've done some very, very minimal. I learned how to do a little bit about the light board and the sound board and things like that. I've done, I don't know if this counts necessarily, but I've done some ushering and some concessions. I've never done bus greeting, though.
It all counts.
Mm-hmm.
All
of it. I have, one of my favorite things to do is help with costumes. I don't know if you guys ever met Peggy Freeman before she passed. She was wonderful. Whenever she would do a production,
venue did she?
A lot of times it was at Music Guild, but she did do a lot through the Moline High School Theater Department.
Oh, okay.
When I was involved in that as well. So we got pretty close, and that's, being an artist and my grandmother's a seamstress, I learned how to sew, and so I was able to kind of help with those things. And then I've been a quick dresser before as well, a couple of times.
A quick dresser? I've never heard that term.
Someone that assists people making quick changes. But I wanted to also mention that all of the technical work and training that actors receive or get truly does help them as a performer on stage. A lot of the concerns that actors have about where do I go, how am I going to manage this costume change, a lot of those fears and concerns are laid to rest when they have that background to know exactly how it works, what the light line is on a proscenium stage, what hitting a mark means, and what those strike marks on the stage mean, and mm-hmm. so on and so forth, how the costumes are incorporated. So, and it's also interesting because we were talking about Jonathan Turner. And for me, as a transplant here in the Quad Cities, this was wonderful for me because it's the first time doing shows here that I've had, a professional experience working with, collaborating with the non-book director, in other words, with the musical director or the choreographer and so forth. Here in the Quad Cities, there's kind of the sense that, the director should mind his own business and have nothing to do with the music, and have nothing to do with the costumes, have nothing to do with the technical. And, of course, in my day, when you graduate with a degree in undergrad and with graduate work in theater, you have to learn all of those elements. And so also being a scenic designer and having worked in all the elements, I feel that, the director's vision is the director's vision. It's not, I just tell the actors where to stand and then step back and the rest of the performance is handled by other people. So Jonathan and I were able to collaborate long before we had a cast to determine how these songs were going to go, how they were going to be interpreted, what they mean to the play, and so on. And so that was very refreshing. That is actually how theater works in the professional world. So, in any case, that was really something special. And again, we owe so much to Jonathan for that production.
I can certainly relate to that because, as you know, all my prior theater experience before Harvey was classical. And I never had to big costume changes at all. So that I was really kind of freaked out about having to make costume changes and be ready because, especially in the first scene where I have to put on the coat and the hat and everything, and that did scare me a lot. Okay, so we've covered musical, your bucket list. Do you have a non-musical bucket list role? Or do you just prefer to do music?
Well, you mentioned Sydney, you mentioned Little Women.
Mm-hmm. But Little Women, the musical.
Oh, you're speaking of the musical.
Yep. There is a play, The Miracle Worker.
Yes.
And I would love to be, and I, forgive me, I can't remember her name, but
Annie Sullivan? Or?
I don't know if I want to call her a nanny, the person who comes and helps her learn language.
That's Annie Sullivan, Sullivan.
Okay,
sure.
Yeah.
That would be interesting. I think you would be good at that.
Thank you.
Well.
Did you notice there's an Anne and Annie theme running through?
Yes,
this?
Anne of Green Gables and Annie Sullivan. Aha, I repressed Annie syndrome here. Okay. Well, I always have two questions at the end of each podcast. What does community theater mean to you?
I think community theater creates for the actors and the technical elements, all the people involved, to have a sense of community. I know that's community theater, all community, but to create a close-knit group of people, to create a sense of belonging. I know every cast that I've ever been a part of, there is this sense of family that you create over the, whether it's 6 to 8 weeks of rehearsal and performance time. You become so close with who you're involved with, and you walk away, and a lot of the time that closest never leaves. For example, from Fiddler on the Roof, the Sisters and Suitors, we still to this day get together every, as often as we can. It sort of ends up being every few months.
You might want to explain to the listeners what you mean by sisters.
Sure.
And suitors.
So the three older sisters in Fiddler on the Roof, Seidel, Huddle, and Hava, and then their husbands in the show, we all just became very, very close friends. And so community theater provides an opportunity for people who would otherwise just lead boring old lives. I mean, for example, I'm sure he'll come over and not frustrated, but Thane is a banker. And while it's very important to have bankers, and not that all bankers are boring or bored, it would be mundane to only be a banker. And so to think about these people who have any given field that they work in, it's something to look forward to. And so, yeah, that's what it means to me to be in community theater.
That's interesting because several of the guests we've had on the podcast have very, what I would call, boring, mundane day jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the theater provides that creative side
for
of
sure.
them to come out.
Mm-hmm.
So the last question is, I've got nothing to do on Friday night. There's so much going on in the Quad Cities with the festivals and the theater openings and music venues and stuff. Why should I choose to go to theater?
I'm going to think about that for a second. So I read a book by, I hope I don't botch her name, Emily Nagoski, I believe it is. It's called Burnout. And she gives 6 examples of what you can do to complete the stress cycle. And she talks about the science behind it. But one of the most important things that she has realized through her scientific research is when you view live music and live theater, it actually has a real impact on your brain neurologically. If you do a brain scan and you say you're at a concert and they're performing a song and the whole audience is singing along with them, it can actually, again, it's been a while since I've read the book, but I believe it says something to the effect of it can actually synchronize their heartbeats. And it is very, very healing to a nervous system that has a lot of trauma to it to be in a room full of people doing the same thing as each other, especially when it comes to music and performance and things like that. So I think in the Quad Cities, there's, like you said, so much to do. There's the baseball stadium. There's any number of things that you can do for entertainment, for fun. We're very fortunate to live in this metropolitan area that has a lot of opportunities for anybody who has any type of interest. But I have seen so many people come to shows and say afterwards, I've never been to a play, I've never been to a musical, and I'm sorry that it waited until now to see one because I can't wait to come back. So even people who have very little knowledge or interest in it prior to coming, most of the time they're always very grateful that they did.
Wow, that's really great. The heart thing just is really touching and interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Well, I think we have done a wonderful job here. I want to thank you again, Sydney Crumbleholm, for being on the podcast. I want to thank Jake Ladd for co-hosting today. I'm Chris Hicks.
And I'm Jake Ladd.
Break a leg.
Break a leg.
Thanks for listening to Footlights, a community theater podcast from the Quad Cities. Footlights is a production of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. If you'd like to explore more podcasts from WVIK or support our work, you can do that at wvik.org or by downloading the WVIK app.